Well, this is the hour, of course. We're going to take your phone calls with Kelly Sullivan Walden. We'll do some dream interpretations or just questions about dreams. I've got a few questions myself, but we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Kelly Sullivan Walden with us. Her new book is called Luminous Humanist. Where do people get the book, Kelly?
Anywhere books are sold. Amazon and Barnes & Noble and local bookstores, local metaphysical bookstores. But, Luminous Humanist. They can also get it on my website, KellySullivanWalden.com.
You had a near-death experience. When one has that near-death experience, mm-hmm. is a dream like the dying process?
That's what I discovered, yeah. It is, it's strangely similar. When we leave our bodies and we go into an astral realm and we get insights and we see things, we're still us, though. We're still us in our dreams. We're still us when we die. Our physical aspect is gone, but the non-physical aspect, which is 99.999% of who we are, is what we take with us. So there's so much in common that death has in common with dreams. It's kind of amazing. But either way, we slice it. It's like we have to wake up to the fact that we are much more than our physical bodies. That's for sure.
Well, in like a lucid dream, unless you're in a lucidity form, do you know you're dead?
Ooh, you know, I can say that when I was in my death experience, I didn't think of myself as being dead, although I knew I was not in my body, but I didn't know. I mean, there was a moment when I really worked hard to get back to my body that I was aware that I might not be able to, and I was fine with that. I was trying so hard to get back into my body because I could tell that the people, my husband, for example, would be traumatized, and everybody who was in the space would have been a traumatic 911. It was a 911. In fact, the ambulance was called. I was on a gurney.
Oh my God!
There was lights, you know, all the stuff. But I felt great. But it was like the awareness that the people in my life weren't, and they would be traumatized. So part of it was codependence that brought me back. But also there was a sense that I wasn't done, and I wanted to see if I could take with me some of the amazing feeling and wisdom that I connected with on the other side. It was like, oh God, put me in, coach. Can I get another shot? Now I know how to hit the ball. Now I know what to do. Can I try it again? It was that kind of a feeling.
I love it. I love it. And you've been doing this for a long time. You have oracle cards. What are they?
I do. I have Awakened Dreamer oracle cards. I have Dream Goddess oracle cards. The Hero's Journey Dream Oracle has done really well. It's won a number of awards, the Carta Awards and Cover Awards, and just the plain old Dream Oracle cards. Those have done really well. A lot of people really love those. And I've got some more coming up. I'll be talking to you probably in a few more months, George, with my next cards that'll be coming out.
All right, good for you. Let's go to the phones. Let's start with going to Keith in Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Keith.
Yes, sir. Hi, George, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
So on tonight's program, you talked about some of the different types of dreams and the guest, and I tuned in a little bit late, but one thing on the subject of prescient dreams or precognitive dreams, mm-hmm. I thought of this metaphor, and I'll briefly share to you a dream that I had back in 2005, but when a major event happens in the future, it's like the metaphor is throwing a rock into the water. It creates a ripple effect, and you mm-hmm. see those ripples, but if the event is so significant that it could literally cause a ripple effect back through time. And so kind of my question is could some people pick up on that? And about 3 weeks prior to, it was late December of 2005, you know, I had a dream of flood-ravaged third-world countries surrounding the Indian Ocean. Well, we all know what happened in late December in 2005 in that part of the world. Mm. And I saw this. I didn't think anything of it. It was just I saw people carrying baskets on their heads and flooded dead animals and buildings and debris and water everywhere. Wow. I didn't know what it was. It was just a dream. And then the event happened in South Asia with the tsunami, and then it was like, it didn't really hit me until the next day. Like, it came to me that I dreamed that. Mm. So, and that's not the only one. I won't go into the others or tell you about what else I've dreamed that hasn't happened unless you want to know. But so what are your thoughts on that? It's like, is that a thing?
There's something about the where we go when we're dreaming is a non-local aspect of our reality. It's not time-bound. It's not geographically bound. It's kind of an infinite space. And so we do have the ability to pick up what's happening in what we would call the future. I mean, some people would say that, and even Einstein said past, present, and future, it's all happening simultaneously. It's relative to the observer. And I love that even Bashar, the channel, Daryl Anka, who channels Bashar, talks about the multiple simultaneous lives that are happening, and that what we call the future is really just an aspect of the now that's happening, and we are connected to it. So I think this is, I like your metaphor and about the pebble. I think it is, we do have the ability to, in our dreams, we step out of this the density of our ordinary reality, and we do step into a more, just a more rarefied field where we're able to catch a glimpse of these things. So I think that you're a gifted dreamer, and it sounds like you've had a lot of other ones. So I would say just the way to know whether you're having a precognitive dream or not isn't just the vivid nature of it, but it's also to track how that dream comes to you. Some people get really good at noticing the themes in their precognitive dreams. They take place in a certain kind of an atmosphere, a certain kind of a person comes to them. So bravo to you for having that dream, even though what a terrifying dream to have. But sometimes this is how some of us wake up to our gifts, is through these very tragic circumstances. But thanks for sharing that, Keith.
Kelly, why do most people not remember their dreams?
Dreams are difficult to remember. Unless they really grab us by the throat, like it sounds like Keith's dream did, and unless we have a habitual muscle in place to go out of our way to remember them, if we wake up too quickly, if we jump out of bed, if we turn on our phones, if we surf the internet, those dreams will be gone. They take place in a different part of the brain than the part of our brain that wakes up in the morning. So it's like we're literally passing a baton back and forth. And if we can remember a dream, it's like we slow down the process of the subconscious mind handing over the baton to our conscious mind. If we can catch it right in mid-pass, then we remember the dream. But it is a little tricky. But I've got some tips and some kind of hacks to be able to remember dreams more frequently.
Our first-time caller, Dustin, is in Blairstown, Iowa. Welcome to the show. Hi, Dustin.
Thank you very much, George. And I quirkily want to say Merry Christmas, Adam, yesterday, and to Merry Christmas, Eve, to bring us into...
Thank you, Dustin.
Yeah, very corny. Thank you.
Very cute.
But I wanted to touch on, before the break, you were discussing the waking state and the dream state and how they're tied together.
Yeah.
And it had me thinking about that we are, it's as if, you know, the kingdom of God is all, and the dreaming mind is going back to the kingdom of God. And it's as if we're aware of these things, because the soul never sleeps,
right.
We are told or reminded of our soul contract, and we get a chance to come back into the waking life and, you know, bring that into manifestation. You're talking about the eternal now,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, living is to go back home, remembering by that understanding, and then we can start to impact current timelines, you know, based on the wisdom brought back from the deep meditation or the awareness in the dream. It's like, then that can, as we figure out our soul contract, then we can start to affect it in our current reality.
What do you think of that,
Kelly? Ooh, well, what I love that Dustin brought up is, it's really, this is, I mean, I think everything in our lives is happening to awaken us to our, to a higher state of consciousness. I mean, there's a lot of people that talk about how we're living in 3D, and yet the fifth dimension is really just a thought away. And in the fifth dimension, that's also kind of the dreaming dimension. It's where we enter when we leave our bodies. There is a more heavenly realm. And I know that all kinds of people with different mythologies and different religions, I don't want to get too religious here, but I know it does tend to open us up to a spiritual, metaphysical conversation, because it is beyond the body. And there are many people that do gain a glimpse of a higher sense of themselves, a higher sense of reality, a higher way. This is what's happened to me. This is why I wrote the book Luminous Humanist, because of the glimpses I've had behind the curtain, and they do tend to connect us. And our words can sometimes be clunky here, but I do like the verbiage of us all having a soul contract. And it's wonderful when we can kind of tap into those Akashic records and get a sense of the real reason that we chose to incarnate here. It's not an accident. I referred to the Bhagavad Gita earlier. I'm studying Hinduism lately, and they believe that it takes millions of incarnations in other forms in order to earn the right to have a human incarnation. So if that's true, either way you slice it, it's important that we're here. And while we're here, we might as well wake up and have the most awakened version of our life that we're here, not just be in the mundane day-in, day-out drama, but to wake up and see this, see what we're doing, and be able to bring some of that higher awareness, that dream perspective, to our waking lives.
Kelly, we began the program talking about dreams of the pandemic, and you believe that there was a blessing in disguise,
yeah,
of pandemic nightmares. How come?
Well, I think the blessing in disguise, the nutshell, is that more people are paying attention to their dreams, more people are remembering dreams. My hope for where we go from here is that it's not just nightmare related, because people are remembering their dreams a lot of times because of the nightmares. And I like to teach people how to work with their nightmares, and how to treat nightmares actually as an instigator to our soul's growth, and to treat a nightmare like it's an unfinished dream. Sort of like a movie. If you watch a drama and you end the movie, like you don't finish watching 5 minutes before the end, you're going to be left with a cliffhanger. You're going to be left disturbed. But if you go back in and you finish watching it, there's usually a resolution. So if you wake up too soon, you'll have the experience of a nightmare. But if you know that you are the dream director, you have the right to write that script. You can go back in and finish the dream, even in a conscious state. You don't have to be a skilled lucid dreamer to do this, but you can remind yourself that if it's a nightmare, it's an unfinished dream, and you have the license creatively to finish the dream in a way that gives you your power back and awakens you to a sense of life being on your side ultimately. And that's, I believe, our charge. That's the good news.
That is good news. Let's go west of the Rockies, Glencoe, California. Person's called Goldmine. Hello there. Welcome to the show, Goldmine.
Hello, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. We
talked once before about the dreams that leave marks on you.
Right.
Dreams, and we weren't able to come up with a conclusion to it, and I was hoping Peggy might be able to give me some, and then I'd like to ask you another question if she could help with that. The last one I had was I got in a bar fight, and at the time I didn't have a beard, but in the dream I did, and the guy pulled the beard hair out of my chin.
Ouch.
And when I woke up, my pillow was bloody, and there was a spot on my chin where the hair would have been.
Oh, my heavens.
What caused that, Kelly? What's going on?
You know, there is, I mean, we're supposed to be, while we're sleeping, we're supposed to have sort of a paralysis of our limbs. We're not supposed to be able to...
Sleep paralysis.
Yeah, exactly. We're not supposed to be able to move around. So it's considered... It's a dysfunction if we walk in our sleep, if we talk in our sleep. We're not supposed to be able to do that, and yet sometimes there is a bleed over where there is a physical motion that replicates what's happening in the dream. Like, there was a woman in my Chicken Soup for the Soul book, Dreams and Premonitions, that had a dream where somebody walked up to her in a bar and handed her a drink, and instead of giving her the drink, they knocked her over the head with it and yelled at her, "Wake up." She woke up in the morning and had water all over herself, and her head was hurting, similar to Goldmine, where there was an actual bump on her head.
Mm-hmm.
She hit her own head with her water. And so we could say, we don't know exactly because I wasn't in the room with you, Goldmine, but maybe you should put some cameras so you can see what happens during your dreaming. But we could say, at the very least, There is the dream maker. There is the higher self that is orchestrating the dream, that is trying to get our attention. And when there is a physical component to this metaphysical situation that's happening in our dreams, at the very least, it gets our attention so that we can pay attention to what was happening in that dream. Why that? Why now? Why? What was the deeper hidden message in getting that part of your beard rubbed off? There's something I think symbolic about that. I think it's at the very least a message to pay a deeper attention to what was happening in the dream, what the feelings were, and what it may have been pointed toward in your waking reality.
And in his first part of his question, Kelly, he was talking about how he wakes up with marks all over his body.
Oh my
so
God.
My twofold question is
yeah.
One, could he be self-abusing himself? Or two, could there be something demonic that visits him in his sleep state?
Well, I'd like to think there isn't something demonic that's visiting him in his
sleep. Is that possible, though? Can it be done?
There's no way any of us can know absolutely everything. But I would first want to rule out this. I always want to rule out the physical aspect of it, to look around and see. I mean, if this is happening regularly, I think he would be a perfect candidate to have some cameras on at night for a while, set
right.
up a GoPro
right.
in the corner of the room so you can see.
Couple cameras.
Exactly, absolutely. And I know that there are some very bizarre things that do happen to people.
What if the cameras capture something coming in at night, scratching
you? Oh, my God. Well,
and then they turn and look at the camera and smile.
Oh, my God, we're all going to have to dream. Now we can't unsee that.
We're all going to have nightmares tonight.
Thank you very much. But luckily, we're going to treat it like it's an unfinished dream so we can take the dream, pick the dream up where it left off, and end it with a happy conclusion. Oh, my God. George, you should be writing horror movies. That was good.
Well, you never know. You never know. Tell us your website, Kelly.
It's KellySullivanWalden.com. And if that's too hard to spell, you can go to IHadTheStrangestDream.com. It'll take you to the same place.
We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls with Kelly as we talk about the dream state and interpreting some dreams. We'll be back. We'll be back with more phone calls with Kelly Sullivan Walden as she interprets your dreams here on Coast to Coast, so get ready for that. Join us on our live Christmas Eve and Christmas night programs. On our program tomorrow on Christmas Eve, we are going to be talking about the miracles of Christmas and miracles in general, plus some special visits by Lionel Fanthorpe with "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," the incredible letter from Michael, and some other surprises for you. Then on Saturday, on Christmas night, Connie Willis will be hosting. She's got a great program in store for you. Sunday, George Knapp will be on. You know our pledge, no tapes on the holidays, so we've got live shows for you, but it starts with us tomorrow night. I'll see you right here by your radio, wherever you may be. And welcome back. Our final segment with Kelly Sullivan Walden as we talk about her work. Her latest book, by the way, is Luminous Humanist. Where do people get the book again, Kelly?
Thanks, George. They can get it on my website, which is kellysullivanwalden.com, or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or at their local metaphysical bookshop.
And what are you working on now? Some other cards, you were saying.
Yeah, I've got some other dream oracle deck. I've got actually a Luminous Humanist oracle deck that will be coming out soon. And I'm also excited to be working with the Shift Network. I'm a new faculty member there. And I'm
good for you.
And an Awakened Dreamer, the Way of the Awakened Dreamer course that starts in January. And I'm offering a free... there's an intro video to it. It's on my website, along with meditations to help you get a good night's sleep. And people can get that for free on my website at kellysullivanwalden.com.
When you were a little girl, did you ever anticipate dreams as your career?
No, not at all. I had no idea. I thought I wanted to be an actress.
Really?
And I did do some of that. I did live some of that dream for a while, and then until I stopped. But yeah, I would have never imagined in a million years. It's so funny. It's like sometimes it's true. It's like, how do you make God laugh? You tell him your plans, and it's like, yeah, no, you're not going to be doing what you thought you were going to be doing.
Well, let's go to the phones. They're all lining up here for you, Kel, and this half hour is going to take off. Steve in Casa Grande, Arizona. Hello, Elvis. Welcome to the show.
Oh, Elvis.
Well, it's funny. I've been an Elvis impersonator for many years, and I've never had a dream about that or never had a dream about Elvis or anything. It has nothing to do with my dream state, but
wow,
and he's a good impersonator too, Kelly.
Because
Steve and I sang together at an event a couple of years ago.
Oh, I'm so jealous to him.
That was like a dream. That was very certain. When I look back at that, that was kind of like a dream because afterwards, then we walked around looking for trouble in the casino, and it was really surreal. I'm in my Elvis suit, and George was himself. So it was George, Nori, and Elvis walking around, and people were walking up, and, you know, they were mostly talking to him, not me, but anyway.
That's exciting. Elvis was my first love. I thought I was going to marry Elvis.
Really?
Yeah, it was my first album.
Give her a little, Stephen, give her a little Elvis hello. Go ahead.
Sure. Let's go with, let's see, what's a good one?
Thank you very much. It's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
There you go.
Jailhouse Rock.
You wanted me to sing, but yeah, we don't have time for that. No, but I wanted to ask you about dreams where I have dreams where I'm flying a lot, and those are great. And then I have other dreams where I can go right through a wall. Like I'll be in a situation or I'll be somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then I just decide to leave, and I can feel it. Like I feel my body going through the wall. Like for a second, I have to like hold my breath, and then once I get through, then I'm fine, and then I'm on the other side.
Oh,
and then that's one fascinating. That one I have a lot. And then the recurring dream I have is where I'm in school, and I'm walking down the hall, and I can't find the class that I'm supposed to be at. And then in the back of my mind, I'm worried I'm not going to make it through that class or I'm not going to finish that. And then it's like I'm not going to graduate. So I always have that recurring dream.
Right. Okay, well, a lot of people have that dream. I think that when people dream about being back at school and not being able to necessarily, quote-unquote, make the grade, it might reflect a moment in our life that we're going through where we're also having a similar struggle, wondering, am I going to pass this test? Am I going to make it? Do I have all the answers? Back in school, they say that, like the song, the first cut is the deepest. And for many of us back in school, it was the first time that we had to figure out how to make the grade, how we were being graded and evaluated, and it was very stressful for our young selves. And I think any time we're going through a growth spurt in our lives, we'll have dreams like this to remind us that we did, in fact, figure out how to graduate, and we did eventually find the answers. So, and it's part of how we're grappling with how to make it through a challenging time. So clearly it's been working for you. And also walking through a wall, I would say that's an awesome metaphor. If it were my dream, I'd think that the dream is showing me how when there's a situation that I'm feeling maybe claustrophobic, or mm-hmm. I'm feeling like there's no solutions, that my dream is showing me by having walking through a wall that, oh, wait a minute, these difficulties might not be as solid as they seem. So,
good.
Bravo.
Joe, Long Island, New York. Go for it, Joseph.
Yeah, how's it going, Kelly? I have two kind of horror dreams relating to the pandemic.
Oh, let's hear it.
Yeah, first one is, I think that the people that are injecting children, Aborigines, or designing these shots are going to hell and buying a ticket to hell in real life. So here's what happens. I get on a train to go only like a couple of stops to like the next town. Then all of a sudden I realize I'm the only one on the train.
Ooh.
And it's like a big black car that's metallic, almost like Star Trek.
Ooh.
And it's not going to let me off. Then I said, I brought my ticket to hell. I'm on one of these trains to hell.
Ooh.
So I said to myself in a dream, they're not going to let me off. So I said, I got to wake up. And it took me like two tries to wake up.
Mm.
So somehow, so that's my first one.
Okay.
My second one is, I think this is like a murder-suicide pact, you know, what people are doing. It's like Jonestown.
Ooh.
So I have this dream where I'm on a roof of a building, but I don't realize I'm on the edge, so I'm looking across other buildings in the city, and nobody's in the buildings. Then all of a sudden, there's a girl that's like seems to be like sunning in blue jeans on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
That's sleek, athletic, but not fully aware, and she's about to kick me off the edge of the building.
Ooh.
So I say, I'm going to have to throw her off the roof if she doesn't become aware before she kicks me off the edge.
Ooh, wow.
And, well, it looks like I'm going down anyway because of her. Let me grab her. And then I picture both me and her falling off, which is kind of like a murder on my part and a suicide on, you know,
right.
Going over. And then I said, I don't want to do that, and I don't want to throw her off the roof so I don't go off. So then I end up saying, it looks like I'm going over because I'm three-quarters of the way going over. I better wake up.
Ooh.
I woke myself up. So both of the dreams I got out of by being aware that they were dreams and waking myself up.
Okay. Well, this is amazing. And I think many people learn to become lucid in their dreams first by interacting with nightmares, because that's the first time because it gets our attention so vividly, and we want to correct what's happening in the dream. So we try to wake ourselves up. And in order to do that, you have to know that you were first in a dream. And that's the definition of a lucid dream, the awareness of dreaming while you're dreaming.
You know you're in a dream.
Yeah, so you were able to do something. In both cases, you were able to wake yourself up out of this dream. So in many ways, if it were mine, both of these scenarios are about kind of going down a track or going down, and it being an unfavorable, to say the least, circumstance, and you being able to stop it before it gets to that final destination, before its complete demise. In many ways, I think this is actually, even though it's unsettling and it's a very challenging dream to have, it's showing you that you have the ability to course correct. And so sometimes it takes things getting really extreme before you do it, but it shows you that you can. So I would ask myself, if it were my dream, what's going on in my life where I am hanging out on the edge and where I might be around people that are not so conscious, and maybe I'm not so conscious. I need to wake up. I need to wake up the people around me. What is that situation? And so a dream like this, these two dreams don't happen in a vacuum. I believe they're happening in order to get our attention so that we can then take some form of action in our waking life. So bravo to you that you were able to wake yourself up out of those.
Kelly, what's the rationale behind recurring dreams?
Oh, there's so much here, George. Recurring dreams are, I think, at the very least, are very important. They're like the cosmic highlighter pen telling us, drill here, this is deep, there's something profound happening here. And secondarily, we human beings are habit-making machines. So we create habits in our waking lives, and we have habits in our nocturnal lives. We all have a similar dreamscape. We have similar dream characters, similar dream locations that we all visit. But when I think of a true recurring dream, it's where there's a theme or a particular scenario that recurs because it reflects some kind of unfinished business with our soul, something that happened in our past. It's attempting to help us to right a wrong so that we can move on with our lives and have that resolution.
Next up, we have David, truck driving in Texas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Dave.
Howdy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. Okay, now, I wanted to see if you ever had been able to connect this, correlate this, as like was said at the beginning of the show, that sometimes you have the dreams, George said this, that sometimes you have a dream and it feels so real for a few minutes, like
yes.
It really happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and because I relate everything to the Bible, in Job 33, it tells everybody God gives us our instructions while we sleep.
Yes.
While we're in a deep sleep in a dream.
Mm.
So, have you ever recognized a correlation between maybe deja vu? Like when you have those deja vu moments and you come into this, you feel like you've done it before. Could that be because your subconscious mind remembers this, but it was actually you dreaming it? This was the instructions that our father gave you, so that it says that he gives us our instructions so that we don't fall in the pit. So is there a correlation between that, maybe in the back of our minds, we remember this dream? That's why it feels so real with deja vu.
Oh, yeah. I think everything that you're saying points to, this is also something that a lot of Native Americans say, that everything happens first in a dream. And on some level, what happens in the dream state is it's just an other than ordinary reality. And who we are, I believe we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And when we step outside of the limitations of our human reality, we step into that vast field where there is more of the spiritual reality takes over. And for those of us who are religiously oriented and we have this sense of God, and I like that you're quoting Job. I think that's one of the most profound aspects of the Bible. I think we do receive those great messages that can help us to reflect on why we're here and who we really are and what we're really doing here. And deja vu connects to that because it's, in many ways, I think a deja vu is sort of like, if you've seen the movie The Matrix, I knew that there's a new one coming out. It's like there's these little cracks that happen in our waking reality. Everything seems so ordinary, and then all of a sudden there's this deja vu, or there's this synchronicity, or this strange happenstance, and it causes, it jolts us out of our ordinary sense of self. And I think a deja vu does that. It's like a crack in the matrix. It's a little blip. It's a bleed over from these different states of consciousness. And at the very least, if we're wise, we'll ask ourselves, what is this trying to tell me, and how can I use this for good in my waking life?
That's the way to do it. Kelly's got a 7-week course starting in January. Full information on her website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Thanks, Kelly. For Michael Cosio, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our Christmas Eve program. Until then, be safe, everyone.